Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. And now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umeth, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
Well, good morning. And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine. We are live in the studio. Took a break last week with lots of good information and some of our favorite calls from the summer. So hopefully you had a chance to tune in if you were not out and about like so many are on Labor Day weekend. Dr. Mixon, were you out and about anywhere Labor Day weekend last weekend?
Yeah,
with
yeah.
Family, you got to do some fun stuff with your daughter and your
Well,
mother.
Yeah, we went down and did a little shooting. Shooting skeet. Yeah, we were shooting skeet. And, just killing lots of clay pigeons.
Oh, there you go. There you go. And my daughter and son-in-law were out of town. So we had grandbabies, age 4 Ooh. And 1 for 4 days. And woo! It was a lot easier when I was 30 years younger, but boy, I was able to keep up with them. So that was a good thing.
Yeah.
Lots of fun. Yeah. We made sure we were out to the beach doing lots of walks and lots of playing at the pirate, as they call the pirate park. So
the pirate park.
Yes. It's a right near my home and it has a big giant pirate ship that is fun to play on for little toddlers. And then they have a bigger one right next door. And it's right near the water.
That you climb on.
Of course. Unless I'm chasing the 1-year-old, then I'm crawling underneath through those tunnels and down those slides.
Of course.
So of course. Yes.
Good exercise.
Absolutely. They kept me on my toes. Oh, well, welcome to the show. Dr. Jerry Mixon here. My name is Lynette. Dr. Samira Umeth has the weekend off, but she will be back next week. And I will be in Germany, so Jerry Berg will be coming in for me. So looking forward to that and taking a little bit of a break there. And we love talking with you. If you have a call or if you'd like to call and be on the show today, we would love to talk with you if you have any questions about a diagnosis, maybe some side effects you're having, or maybe you just didn't get some clear answers about what's going on with you. We'd love to talk with you at 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. Okay, so Dr. Mixon, we usually like to kick off the show by finding out what's going on, what's making news medically.
News, huh? Well, let's see. In COVID, we got about 300 and some odd deaths a day now, which is really not bad considering there's 320 million people in this country.
Okay. And at our height, how do we compare that at our height?
At our height,
COVID?
There was about 10,000 deaths.
Okay. Quite a bit different. Quite a bit different. And this is around the whole world, not just in Washington State.
Right.
Okay.
And so, you know, 350 deaths a day is really not all that bad. And they're mostly quite elderly folks or morbidly obese or have heart and kidney disease. So, you know, if you're a moderately lean under 70, your chances of dying of Omicron are almost zip.
Okay.
So, nevertheless, they do now have a Omicron specific booster that has now been approved by, quote, emergency authorization.
Yeah, what's going on with that?
Well, I don't know. I think you're having difficulty coming up really calling it an emergency when you have very few people dying from it. But nevertheless, that's why they've done it. And it has not been well tested. They only looked at 200 and some odd people, and they are assuming that it will be as safe as the previous versions, even though they have not done the test. So I'm personally a little skeptical. So I'm going to sit tight and take a look and see how many people actually get sick with Omicron and how sick they get. And I'll be looking at my age group with people that are relatively fit and say, what are my risks? Maybe I'll get it. Maybe I won't. I just have not made up my mind yet. I'm not all that impressed. The other thing that we're looking at, obviously, is the monkeypox. Monkeypox has spread apace through the homosexual community. Men who have sex with men seem to be at significant risk for this problem, unless, of course, they have been vaccinated for smallpox. The smallpox vaccines work perfectly well against monkeypox. So if you are a man who has another man as a lover, for goodness sakes, go get your smallpox vaccine so that you don't have to be at risk for monkeypox. And if you are a bisexual man, you've got a woman in your life, protect her, because if you get monkeypox and take it home to her, she will be distraught and it will stress your relationship, I can pretty much promise you. Let's see, what else is there going on? Oh, yes, polio. Polio, interestingly, even though there's only been one clinical case, has now been declared to be an emergency in New York State. And that's because there are, I think it's four or five counties are now reporting poliomyelitis virus in their sewage treatment plants. And so what's clearly happening is the virus is spreading across New York. It's not making other people sick. They've only had the one person who really got sick from it. But the virus is spreading, and that means that, you know, people are getting infected. They just don't know it. Mm. They don't have any symptoms. They're not paralyzed or anything. And it's mostly, it's a money grab with politicians. Once the governor declares an emergency, then they get a lot more federal taxpayer money to push their vaccination efforts. And I agree, vaccination against polio is a very good thing to do. So, you know, if you are not vaccinated, if your children or grandchildren are not vaccinated, go get it done. We really do not want to see paralyzed children again in America. So, you know, we've got a great vaccine. It worked. We have not had a paralyzed child in this country since 1977 from this disease. And let's not bring it back now.
That's right.
So, and I guess that's pretty much
Is that it? That's all, what's going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, that's all the fancy medical news of the moment, I guess.
Okay. All right. How about any political news you want to comment on, or you want to dive into phone calls?
Let's dive into phone calls.
All right.
Politicians just irritate the hell out of me in general.
Okay. So not today.
Not today.
Not today.
I don't want to mess with the aggravation.
All right. That's totally fine. We would love to talk with you. Our phone lines are ready and open to chat with you this morning on Leading Edge Medicine. Here is the phone number. It's 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757, and we're going to talk with Richard to start off our show. Hi there, Richard. Good morning.
Hello, Richard.
Hi there.
Richard, speak to us.
Hi there, Richard. What can we do
How
for
can
you?
We help, sir?
Is there a normal PSA range in relation to age? From what I've read, the average PSA for men 70 to 79 is 6.5 or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
recently, I have had a PSA reading, and it's 5.8.
Okay.
I'm wondering. Go ahead. Okay.
Well, the importance is less what is the absolute reading as in how rapidly it is rising.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
When you say, you know, what is the average? Yes, that is the average for men in that age group is over 6. But the problem with that is, of course, that includes people that have prostate cancer with people that don't have prostate cancer. So we're mostly looking at the rate of rise. Let me give you a little background on prostate cancer and age. There was a fascinating study done back in the 1990s in Detroit. And I give all of my doctors and all new doctors a copy of this study. Because what they did was, for 2 years in Detroit, every male who died that they could justify a autopsy on, which means every unnatural death, every auto accident, gunshot, suicide, murder, whatever, they did an autopsy, and they did a careful step section of their prostate. And what they found was, men in their 20s, if you look carefully at their prostate, about 20%, one man in five in his 20s, would have a little focus of prostate cancer hiding somewhere in that prostate. In their 30s, it was 30%. In their 40s, it was 40%. In their 50s, it was half. In their 60s and 70s, it was about 70% of men in their 70s. If you look closely enough at their prostate, you could find some prostate cancer. And yet, only about 8% of men will develop a prostate cancer that is of clinical significance at any point in their life. So I'm 75. If you took my prostate out and looked at it carefully enough, there's a better than 70% chance you would find a nidus of prostate cancer in there. And yet I have no symptoms. My PSA is not rising. Everything is stable. And so what it tells us is, in healthy men, the immune system is a very good at suppressing the growth of any prostate cancer. And so while most men by 70 will have some in there, it'll never cause them any grief. Okay. That's the fascinating thing. And in fact, in studies in which men are diagnosed with prostate cancer, let's say they're getting urinary issues or their prostate is PSA is rising, and they do a biopsy and they find some prostate cancer. If the Gleason 6 or 7, these are the two lowest grades of prostate cancer, if you just sit and watch those men that have been diagnosed with prostate cancer, over a 15-year period, only 7% of them will show any signs that the cancer is growing. Hmm. So 93% of those men with a Gleason 6 and 7, the cancer won't grow. It's there, but it's never going to kill them.
Wow.
Okay. So what that tells us is, for decades, we have over-treated prostate cancer. We have done horrible things to men with surgery and radiation and, you know, medical castrations, when it didn't need to be done.
Wow.
So now we're taking a much more judicious look at prostate cancer. What we want to know is not, is there a little nidus of cancer there? What we want to know is this a cancer that's going to grow and cause the guy some grief? 7% of them will grow. How do we identify those 7% as opposed to the 93% that won't grow?
Mm.
Okay. So now we're developing genetic markers. When you biopsy a prostate and you get a piece and you say, yes, there's a cancer there, you don't just want to stick it in formalin and ignore it. What you want to do is take a fresh sample, freeze it, send it off for genetic analysis. Because now we've got the genetic markers that will tell us whether or not this cancer is high risk of growing or not. Only the cancers that are high risk of growing do we want to get aggressive with the guys. The guys that are at low risk of spread, we do more harm than good with the treatments.
Mm.
Okay. So let me get back to your question. A PSA in the sixes, it's worrisome. We would love it if it was down at two. But how fast is it going up? If a PSA doubles in less than a year, that's a sign that you've got an aggressive, fast-growing cancer, and you really better pay attention to it. If your PSA is 6 and it's been 6 for 3 years and it hasn't moved worth a hoot, odds are you don't have an aggressive tumor.
Okay.
Did that answer your question?
Is that helpful, Richard?
Yes, pretty much validates what my own research has determined. As I said, mine... My recent value was 5.8. I'm going to have another test in a month.
Okay. So,
evidently, there's no real need to run out and have a biopsy at this point, is my conclusion.
Okay, well, tell you what. The music says we got to take a break.
Uh-huh.
And you sit tight, and we're going to talk about your whether or not to get a biopsy here in just a few minutes. Okay?
Stay right there, Richard. We'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine in just a moment.
I'm just so pleased, and I just want people out there to know that it just made a difference. I never, ever had this much energy before, as long as I can remember. And I cannot believe the difference in my husband. Internally changing him. I mean, he's honestly getting more confident. And just listening to the radio, you think, oh, you know, it's an advertisement. But when you're actually here and going through it, it's just a life changer.
And welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Jerry Mixon here. Dr. Samira Umat has the weekend off. Right before the break, talking with Richard about PSA numbers and whether to have a biopsy. Yeah. This is for prostate.
That's right.
Okay.
Now, you know, used to be when I was a medical resident years and years ago, we were very free with biopsies. If the PSA was high or rising, we'd send people off for random biopsies. They'd go in, clean out the bowel the best they could, and they would poke anywhere from 6 to 12 big holes in the prostate through the bowel into the prostate, taking cores at random out of the prostate in hopes that if there was a cancer there, they would find it. And some poor men would get this procedure done every year, year after year after year, because they just had a high PSA.
Wow.
And this is not a totally benign sort of procedure. You're going through the bowel, which is not a sterile place, into the prostate, which is a sterile tissue, with a large bore core needle pulling out pieces at random. And you can hit blood vessels, you get infections, you get all, you know, just not something we want to do. These days, if we see at our clinic somebody with a rising PSA, we start by doing two things. We do a 4K study. This is looking at four different kinases that give us a statistical probability that they have a prostate cancer that's going to grow rapidly. It's not as precise as the genetic study once you get a piece of the tumor, but it's a pretty good statistical window into what might happen. The other thing we do is we send them for an MRI of the prostate. These days, you can find a prostate tumor that is quite small, even just a few millimeters in diameter, will show up on some of the enhanced MRI scans.
Oh, wow.
And so if you find a lesion, if you find a growth in the prostate, then the question is it cancerous or not? And if it is cancerous, how bad is it? Is it one of those that's going to grow or not? So instead of just poking random holes in the prostate.
Right. They know right where to go.
We like to go right to the lesion. So you do the MRI and you say, okay, you know, statistically, the odds are there is a tumor here. We do the MRI. We say, yep, there it is. Then we have the urologist go in and take a piece of that lump.
Okay.
Now we've got something we can send to the pathologist. And will tell us, A, is it a cancer at all? Because sometimes it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And B, if it is a malignancy, what are the genetic markers? What are the risks that it's going to grow and cause us problems? Then we make decisions about how aggressive we're going to treat it. So I prefer to take this slower, stepwise, carefully. I don't want to destroy people's lives treating something that's never going to give them any grief.
Wow.
Answer your question, sir.
Yes, and that is pretty much consistent with my own thinking. I am 84 plus, and I do have BHP.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, and is it not true that with BHP, the PSA would likely be higher.
Yes, just because you've just got more prostate tissue there.
Right.
Yeah, the bigger the prostate, the higher the PSA tends to be, just because there's more prostate tissue putting out prostate-specific antigen. Sure.
Right. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, sir. You take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you, Richard. We've got quite a few phone calls here, but we've got room for you at 888-312-5757. Pete from Snohomish is on the line. Hi there, Pete. Thank you for calling in.
How are you today, sir?
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I just have a question to Dr. Mixon about neuropathy. Can that be reversed?
Depends on what's causing the neuropathy. You know, neuropathy just means the nerves are not working well. Okay. There's a pathological process in the nerves, and it can be anything from numbness or tingling or pain or, you know, feeling of bugs running up and down your legs. It can be any number of things. And so the question is, what's causing it? If it's a nerve compression, and we can find the place where the nerves are being compressed, and we can decompress those nerves, usually the neuropathy will resolve. Not a problem. If the neuropathy is caused by too much in the way of B vitamins, if you've got a B2, B3, real high levels, toxic levels, and you're getting a stocking glove distribution neuropathy, just stopping your B vitamins will often then reverse the neuropathy and you get better. If your neuropathy is due to insulin resistance and or diabetes, bigger problem. A lot harder to reverse those neuropathies. We have to treat the underlying problems, see if we can correct the insulin resistance, get your blood sugars down where they belong. And frequently, the neuropathy might improve to some extent, but at least usually stops getting worse. So, you know, that's better than nothing. So it all depends on what's causing the problem.
Yes. My doctor says I'm pre-diabetic. My blood sugar is 105.
Uh-huh. What's your A1C?
Oh. Pardon?
What is your hemoglobin A1C?
5.7.
Okay, so you are right on the borderline. You know, you are in that area. We call you pre-diabetic. Now, I would want to do something about that. If you were at our clinic, we'd be trying to drive you down to 5.2 or less. At 5.7, yes, you can develop a diabetic neuropathy, even though you're not technically a diabetic yet. You're also shrinking your brain faster than you need to. At 5.7, you are losing brain tissue twice as fast as you would at 5.2. That's why we want to get you 5.2 and below. Your risk of dementia is much higher. Your risk of heart attacks is higher. Your risk of strokes is higher. Your risk of osteoporosis and degenerative joint disease is higher. So at our clinic, we would not accept this A1C. We would say, this is a guy is a setup for lots and lots of problems above and beyond diabetes, and let's get aggressive and fix him.
Okay, that helps me an awful lot.
All right.
Thought that maybe neuropathy was not reversible at all.
No, that's not true. Although your neuropathy is probably due to small vessel disease triggered by your high A1C, your high sugar, and probably some insulin resistance. We haven't done the test to find out about the insulin resistance yet, but statistically, it's probably there. So we've got a pretty good chance that with aggressive therapy, we can stop the progression of the neuropathy, and there is some reasonable chance we can make it less severe over time. But that means that we need to get you on the longevity program, and we need to be you a compliant patient that does what your longevity doctor tells you to do. You know, I always have to remind people, writing us a check every year does not solve the problem. You actually have to work the program.
Okay.
All right.
Would that pertain to diet also?
It pertains to diet. It pertains to muscle mass. It pertains to exercise. It pertains to growth tissues. It pertains to inflammatory changes. Yes. What's probably going on with you is the small, tiny blood vessels, the microvasculature, the tiny, tiny blood vessels around the nerves that are so small that the red blood cells go through in single file. Those are probably starting to go bad. And we have to stop that process and try to reverse it. Okay. That's what we have to do. So it's basically not just a sugar issue. It's an insulin issue, but it's also a blood vessel issue, a microvasculature issue.
Hmm. And how is that reversed? I mean, how do you get the proper amount of blood through those blood vessels?
Well, we have to take a look and see where your issues are. We will do, for instance, an in-body. We're going to measure the amount of muscle versus fat inside your abdomen as well as in your extremities. Visceral fat produces more than 80 different destructive peptides, enzymes, and hormones that it dumps into your bloodstream that sets you up for this issue. On the other hand, working muscle has more than 100 different myokines that are produced that are actually growth factors, anti-inflammatory factors to decrease inflammation and help you to heal. So we're going to measure all of your hormone balance. We're going to look at your anabolic hormones. We're going to shift your hormone balance towards muscle and away from fat. We're going to try to help you to grow new tissue instead of letting old tissue die. We may want to do, for instance, we'll look at your senescent markers. We may want to do some anti-senescent cell, kill the senile cells in your tissue so to allow you to heal and repair faster. We'll probably put your hormone balance back closer to a 25-year-old than a man of your age. We're going to look at your inflammatory markers, and we're going to try to decrease the inflammation in your system. We got a whole lot of stuff we do at Longevity to try to turn this around.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. That helps me. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, sir. Take care.
Thank you, Pete. We'll be back in just a moment with more Leading Edge Medicine and your phone calls at 888-312-5757.
Gone to my doctor, and then I found out I had osteoporosis. She wanted me to go on the traditional female hormones. And then I heard Dr. Mixon on the radio. Then I realized there were really good options that were different, and I didn't have to take the traditional route. Within 3 months of being a patient at Longevity, I had my energy back. I could feel happy again.
You make me feel so young. You make me feel so spring has sprung. And every time I see you grin, I'm such a happy individual.
And welcome back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. We were just talking with Pete about neuropathy and explaining what Longevity Medical Clinic could do.
Yes.
To get him, his doctor said, you know, you're pre-diabetic, you know, don't really need to worry about that. However,
But you do have to worry about it.
Yes.
And what's happening in a pre-diabetic is you are getting all the same complications of a diabetic. You're just getting them a bit slower than you would if your A1C were higher.
Okay.
But the destructive process is in process. It's going on right now for him. And so we need to be aggressive and see if we can turn this around. And we usually can.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a matter of, you know, we have to, first we measure, we see what's going on.
Okay.
Once we measure, once we have diagnoses, then we can do treatment. So, he's the sort of person that really needs to come in, get his health analysis appointment.
Yep, that free appointment.
Then he, with the diagnosis he's already got, we know that we need to move him on and get the full blood panel. He needs to sit down with the doctor, go over all of his panels and say, let's get him started. He's already got nerves that are not working well. That tells me that he's doing damage to his brain. He's doing damage to his heart. He's probably doing damage to his kidneys and his eyes. So we need to be very aggressive and start turning this around. Decrease the inflammation, decrease all of these processes. And I would bet there's probably an 80% chance that Once we get him on the basic program for 3 to 6 months, we'll probably want to do the anti-senescent cell therapy too.
Okay.
And, you know, disinhibit his own cells' ability to heal. So he needs us. Yeah. Whether he knows he needs us or not is a different issue, but this is a fellow who really needs Longevity Medical Clinic.
Yes. And if you're listening going, you know what, I want to come in. That free health analysis is still available. It's an appointment where you'll come in and do two simple tests, a blood test to check that number, that A1C that Dr. Mixon is talking about.
We already know his is high.
Yes. So. And then also an in-body test. And that's the one that checks for fat and water and muscle in your body,
right? That's
right.
We look at the ratios of muscle and fat in all four extremities and in your core. And that visceral fat is especially important. But it's kind of interesting. The visceral fat is the most important fat we worry about because visceral fat puts out a lot of pro-inflammatory cytokines into your bloodstream. But the muscle in your extremities is equally important.
Okay.
Because muscle, working muscle, decreases inflammation and promotes healing. So we need to change his metabolism towards muscle and away from fat. And changing his metabolism means we have to look at his hormone balances. And because most men in his age group have an anabolic hormone load, that is the hormones that produce lean tissue, are much lower than they were in his youth. And we need to get those back up so he can grow lean tissue instead of fat.
Okay. And you know that by coming in and doing that health analysis appointment. And you can do that one of two ways by simply going to our website, which is lmclinic.com. That's lmclinic.com. And you can push on the button that says free health analysis appointment. Pick the day and the time that work the best for you. And also pick the clinic near you, Kirkland, Tacoma, or Linwood. All right. You can also give us a call if that works better for you. You'd rather talk to a real person. 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. Those are the two ways to get in on that free health analysis appointment so you can measure so that you do know what's going on and what you could be at risk for down the road. All right, we're taking more phone calls, this time headed to Mount Lake Terrace. We have Sandy on the line. Good morning, Sandy. Hi there, Sandy.
Sandy. Come on, Sandy.
Hello.
Speak to us.
Okay, we'll go for, how about this? While we're waiting for Sandy to get back on the line, let's go to Randy.
Randy.
There we go.
Okay, we failed with Sandy. Let's try
Randy.
Let's
go to Randy in Gig Harbor. Hi there, Randy.
This is Randy, not Sandy.
Okay.
Go. We've got two of them here. Thank you, Randy.
But
how
it's going to be
help?
A hot day, so you're over in Gig Harbor. You can take off your shoes and run your toes through the sand.
Oh,
how about that?
Yeah.
It's so hot in Gig Harbor. You can't believe it.
All right. How can we help you today, sir?
Dr. Mixon, I'm a member of your program since 2001. You were the first doctor that we saw down at Caroline Point.
Uh-huh.
Long ago.
You were there just a few years after I started, because I started the clinic in 1998, so 2001. Yeah, you were in that early cohort.
You were the only MD there. You had an assistant. But
yep.
Anyway, that's where we got started. We've been with you ever since. But I've got a question that I think only you can answer, and it may be difficult for that.
All right, I'll try.
I had a condition, a GI condition, over the last 2 years, and it was got worse, and they did all the tests and went to a couple of specialists, and finally got down to, we don't know what's wrong with you in your intestinal area, so we need to do an exploratory. So I said, good, I'm all in favor of exploratories. I've done a few of those myself, and so we did that. So they did an exploratory on me, and that was March the 9th. And I came very close to dying through that procedure. But it turned out that the They did not know until later what I had, but they took out my whole colon because it was very badly involved, and they were afraid it was going to rupture. And so I survived that, and I'm getting better all the time. So I need to know, and my question, I'm getting down to my question. My question is, I've been, prior to that, I was taking your optimal memory tablets and drugs, and now that I don't have a colon, I want to know what medicines in the optimal memory are handled in the small intestine.
That's a good question. And I don't have an answer on the tip of my frontal lobes. I mean, I would think.
I didn't really expect you to.
Yeah.
But it's a question I need to know.
Sure, it is.
Some of the tablets are in there. I mean, I was going through what's there. At this stage now, it's been, like I said, it's March, so now here it's 1st of September. And so yeah, I'm doing pretty well. I'm finally getting my health back to where I can plan my, once again, my life a little bit. Mm-hmm. And anyway. I want to make sure if I took any of the optimal memory drugs that I'm just passing on out to my ileostomy, or not.
Sure. Okay. Well, let me approach that systematically. The water soluble supplements are going to be absorbed pretty fast. So those I'm not worried about. All the water soluble compounds are going to either in the stomach or the small bowel are going to be absorbed. So those don't worry me much. The question is how much of the fat solubles you're going to absorb, because the fat solubles typically would be absorbed in the colon. Usually what will happen is the fat compounds mix with the bile salts up in the jejunum, and then they are absorbed later on down the gut. I'm going to have to do some research. Okay, I can't give you a blow by blow, you know, compound by compound right now. But do me this favor, would you please? Go on the website to contact us. Just remind me that you're the fellow that now has an ileostomy, lost his colon surgically. And you're taking the optimal memory, and you want to know which ones that I believe will be absorbed efficiently with the bowel you've got left. And with that, then I can, you know, that'll tell me what my task is, and then I can dive into the literature a little bit and try to get you some rational answers instead of guessing. Does that sound fair?
It sounds fair. Luckily, the surgery was curative.
And good.
There was no sign of cancer or anything. The diagnosis is IMHMV, which means, I never heard of it, and I'm in medicine, idiopathic myointestinal hyperplasia of the mesenteric vein. So it was a mesenteric problem, and with a vein problem. It was very unusual. They said, and I'm not proud of this, they said I'm only one of 28 in the world that have been diagnosed this.
Yeah. I mean, I've been in medicine for 40 some years, and I've never seen a case. You know, you're basically talking about an inflammatory process of the blood supply to the colon. The mesenteric vessels are the ones that provide the blood supply to that bowel. And with the inflammatory process going on, you were basically starving your colon for blood, and it was dying. And, of course, if that tissue dies and all those bacteria get dumped into your peritoneum, there would be very low chance of your surviving. So
my mesentery was apparently up to an inch thick in places.
Oh my goodness!
I was amazed that the surgeons could get that out without rupturing it. I mean, it sounds like a surgical nightmare and a miracle almost.
Yes. Yeah, I'm very glad those were not my hands in your belly. It would have scared the bejabbers out of me. All right, I will. Like I said, send me the email to remind me, because you know I lead a fairly busy life, and I can almost promise you I will forget to do it if you don't send me something to remind me. Okay.
Okay. How do I
go to
my email?
Go to lmclinic.com, and then click on Contact Us. Outline this so that it'll joggle my memory. You send it off to the clinic. The girls will screen it, and then this will obviously be one for me. They'll route on to me. Okay?
I knew it had to be you because I didn't dare run this by.
No, this is not one I'd want to dump onto one of my staff physicians. This is one I do myself. All right. Thank you, sir. I do appreciate the call.
There you go. Thank you, Randy, and we will be back with Sandy in just a moment. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there.
If you or someone you love is struggling with memory issues, find out about Longevity Memory. Call Longevity right now to schedule your memory consultation evaluation at 425-654-0258. That's 425-654-0258. Dr. Mixon will be right back.
This is Carolyn. In our 60s, my husband and I were struggling with libido. And I've always called him Dudley Do-Right because he's such a good guy. But since Longevity, now I'm calling him Studley Do-Right.
How sweet it is to be loved by you. Yes, baby. Ooh. How sweet it is to be loved by you.
And we're back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. I'm Lynette. Dr. Jerry Mixon in the studio answering your questions, and you can get through as well at 888-312-5757. That's 888-312-5757. And now we have Sandy on the line. Hi there, Sandy.
Hi. Good morning.
We're glad morning. To have Hi, you.
How
yes.
can we help you?
Well, those wonderful people that made the little devices for your back, the Superion, also have another one called Watchman for people with AFib.
Yep.
And I wanted to know if you knew about it and
oh, yes.
what you could tell me. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, Watchman's a nice little device. The purpose of it is it's basically a spacer that goes up in your left atrial appendage, up in that area way up on the left corner of the atria. And it fills up the space because that's where the blood clots usually form. That left atrial appendage does not contract worth a hoot when you have atrial fibrillation. And so the blood gets stagnant up there and forms what we call a mural thrombus, a big blood clot that fills that up. Then if at some point you do happen to get a good contraction, say you go into sinus rhythm for a few minutes, you can break that big blood vessel, that big clot off, get it pumped out into your lungs and die of a pulmonary embolism. So not a good thing to have happen. So this fills that space up so that you don't form that mural thrombus. And the consequence of it is that you don't have to stay on the blood thinners your whole life. And that then decreases the risk of the bleeding that is always inherent with inhibiting your clotting cascade. So it's a great idea. The statistics on it are pretty impressive. It doesn't appear to be a terribly difficult procedure to put it in. Complication rates are very low. So, you know, if it's something that your cardiovascular surgeon has recommended, I'd say go with it.
Well, I'm in the process of finding out what he has to say about it. They check the heart valves,
uh-huh.
one of them, I guess, before they go ahead with it.
Yep.
So I'm waiting to hear what's going to happen with that. It sounds as exciting as the Superion did.
Yes, yeah. I think it's a nice idea. It's a real advance. Thus far, and it's been on the market a few years, I have not heard you know, any major negatives with it. I mean, nothing done to or by human beings is perfect. There's always, you know, somebody's going to have a complication putting it in. That's just the way the real world works. But it looks to me, from what I've seen so far, is that the complication is very, very low. And the surgeon will make a determination of whether or not he thinks the anatomy of your heart and your valves is such that he can slide it in without difficulty or not. And, you know, we go with his judgment and his determination. After all, I'm the anti-aging doctor. You know, I'm not your cardiovascular surgeon.
No, I understand that. But I trust your judgment.
Well, so thank you, ma'am. And I try not to let folks down, but, you know, you have to recognize many of the questions that I get on this show are not in my area of expertise. I'm pretty darn good at what I do, and on the rest of this, I know a little bit, but mostly I've got to figure out who to send you to. So,
okay. Right. Well, that gives me great encouragement. I'm going to wait and see what the medicine man says.
Okay. Thank you for the call, ma'am. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
All right. 7 minutes away from 11 o'clock, and we are going to stay right here in Seattle. We have Ray on the line with a question for us.
Hello, Ray.
Hi, Ray.
Oh, hi. They told me I was two calls back.
Oh, so yeah, you're next.
You're supposed to be two people ahead of me. Hey, Lynn, right?
Yeah, Lynette.
Mm-hmm.
Newsmax, I was just looking at them. They're saying... there's a headline saying that Germany is not requiring people to wear masks on planes.
Yes.
So you can go look at that today if you get a chance.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. I was holding out. I had it packed just in case, but, you know, it always changes. So
that's right.
Ooh.
Yeah. Right. You know, I was down in Los Angeles a couple of weeks ago on some business meetings, and you didn't have to have your mask on the airplane. But Los Angeles County requires masks in the airport. Only in the airport.
Ah, okay.
So I didn't need a mask in restaurants or streets or hotels. But when you walk in the airport, until you get on the airplane, you have to wear a mask.
Okay.
Well, you know, I took my daughter to the airport on July. And 3 days later, guess what I got?
COVID.
Go.
Yep. Well, you know, honestly, I'm glad I got it because now it's out of the way. You know, my body's going to have a certain amount of natural immunity.
Yep.
My naturopathic doctor is telling me that it's probably good for 6 to 8 months.
Probably at least.
I don't know how accurate that is.
Well, last study I saw said that antibodies from the natural immunity are lasting on balance just over a year now. So, the shots... The initial vaccines, 5.5 months. The boosters, 2.5 months. The natural immunity, up to a year. And then, of course, after that, you've got the T-cell protection. You know, the natural killer cell, T-cells.
Right.
And those may last for years. We don't really know. You know, T-cells are so hard to evaluate because you can't do them with a blood test. You actually need a tissue sample. So you got to take a piece of your tissues to tell me what those are. But
and I actually had the vaccine too. I had the J&J because my job required it. Hey, I got two questions that are probably on your screen there. One, the quick one is, can you catch monkeypox from toilet seats? You know, I was thinking, you know, guys are really bad, and most women probably know this, but they won't lift the seat up and they pee on the seat. You know.
Yep.
Crud, you know. It's all, you know. Can you catch monkeypox from toilet seats?
Okay. It requires getting body fluids inside of your body. Okay.
Oh, okay.
And that's why, you know, men that are having sex with men, they're getting bodily fluids either in their rectum or in their mouth and throat. And so that's the most common causes of spread.
So probably not then.
So probably not. Very, very low risk.
Okay. The other question is, you know, there's so much out there about antioxidants, and I kind of heard you talking about it a while back.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, an antioxidant is something that's going after that free radical, right? Which isn't it just an electron running around? in there.
Yeah, it's a charged particle.
Antioxidant is an antioxidant, right?
Yes, it prevents oxidation of the tissues. Right.
So if you're taking, you know, vitamin C, or if you're getting your antioxidants from blueberries, or one that starts with an A berry.
Oh, acai, maybe.
Acai. Acai berry. Yeah. I mean, they're all the same, right? Antioxidants, antioxidants.
Well, not all the same. Some are more potent antioxidants than others. So it comes down to a couple of things. You know, how much of it you're taking and how potent the antioxidant is. Obviously, a potent antioxidant, you require less of the compound to get the same physiologic effect. So basically what we're looking for is the best mix of antioxidants you can get. And the best way for that is a wide mixture of brightly colored fruits and vegetables. You know, get your leafy greens, get your bell peppers, get your carrots, get all of the veggies you reasonably can, because that's your biggest antioxidant loads.
Okay. Well, yeah, okay. So vitamin C, taking supplemental vitamin C.
It's a help.
Linus Pauling was real big on that guy, you know.
Yes, he was. Linus was taking 10 and 12 grams a day. That's a lot. So. Yeah, that's a lot. But, you know, Linus was a real enthusiast. I don't take anywhere near that.
He's a molecular biologist.
Yep. I'm down around, you know, probably close to a gram a day. That's about a tenth or a twelfth of what Linus Pauling was taking.
There you go.
So,
hey, Ray, we got to run and take a break here. Thank you so much for calling. We got Pete on the line, and we've got room for you as well. 888-312-5757 is the number to call. We have phone lines open at 888-312-5757. Hour 2 of Leading Edge Medicine on the way. Stay right there. We'll be right back.